every inch of my temper. Fuck off and leave, Ryerson. I would, but you've got a death grip on me. He glances between our bodies. Ugh! I drop my hands from his waist and step back. Go! See you in 7 days, Violence. He backs away, moving toward the tunnel that leads to the flight field. Try not to burn the place down while I'm gone. I glare in his general direction until I know he's far beyond my sight. And then I stand there another couple minutes, breathing slowly until I'm certain I have my emotions under some semblance of control. What the hell is wrong with me? How can I want someone who refuses to tell me his whole truth? Who makes a game out of it with his ridiculous ask me anything act, like I'd have the first clue what to ask. He'll be back, Reese says, coming up behind me, holding a missive of her own, excitement shining in her eyes despite the somber tone of her words. I shouldn't care, yet I'm still wrapping my arms around my midsection like I need to be held together. What has you fighting a smile? Did something happen between you two? She moves the letter to her pocket. What's the letter? I counter. Did you get orders? Orders usually only mean one thing. I grab onto her shoulders and grin. Did you? She grimaces. I have good news and bad news. Bad news first. That's my new motto. Atos is our new wing leader. My face falls. Should have expected that. What's the good news? Sienna, our executive officer, moved up to being executive officer of the section. Her smile is brighter than any mage light. And you're looking at our new squad leader. Yes! I outright squeal in absolute delight and yank her into a hug. Congratulations, you're going to be amazing. You already are. Are we celebrating? Sawyer asks loudly from the edge of the courtyard. Abso-fucking-lutely, Riddick shouts, ale sloshing over the sides of his mug as he rushes toward us. Squad leader Mateus! What's your first order, squad leader? Sawyer asks, Nadine racing to catch up to his long strides. Ree glances over each of us and nods as though coming to a decision. Live. I smile and wish it was that simple. An excerpt from Colonel Daxton's Guide to Excelling in the Scribe Quadrant. All tome requests at the Archives of Besgaeth must be recorded and filed. Any cadet who fails to do so will be reported for dereliction of duty, as well as punished for the loss of any text they failed to accurately track. Chapter 7. I've never seen this room before, Riddick says 5 days later, dropping into the seat next to me as the U-shaped amphitheater-style classroom on the third floor fills for orientation. We're grouped in our sections and squads within our wings, putting us in the second row on the right-hand side, staring across the recessed floor at first wing. The noise outside is growing to a steady hum as civilians arrive for conscription day tomorrow. But it's still quiet within the walls of the quadrant. We've spent this week preparing for the first year's arrival, learning our roles at parapet and drinking entirely too much at night. It definitely makes walking the hallways in the early morning interesting. We've never been second years before, Rhiannon replies from my other side, her supplies perfectly aligned on her desk. Good point, Riddick nods. Made it, Nadine slides in next to Riddick, shoving errant strands of her purple hair out of her face with a braced and wrapped hand. How have I never been in this room before? Rhiannon just shakes her head. We have never been second years before, I tell Nadine. Right, makes sense. She grabs her things out of her bag, then drops it at her feet. I guess none of our classes were this far down the hallway last year.
What happened to your hand? Rhiannon asks.
It's embarrassing. She lifts the brace so we can see it. I slipped and sprained it on the steps last night. Don't worry, the healers think Nolan might have an opening for me tomorrow before parapet. He's been run ragged since war games.
That man needs a break, Rhiannon says, bobbing her head.
I wish we had a break like the other quadrants.
Riddick taps his pen on the desk.
Even 5 or 6 days to just get away.
I'm still recovering from the last 6 day break I had away from here, I try to joke.
Ree's face falls and the rest of our squad quiets.
Shit, that was not the right thing to say, but I'm exhausted. There's no point trying to sleep when I can't quit dreaming about Resin.
I'm around if you want to talk.
Ree's kind smile makes me feel like I'm 2 inches tall for not letting her in.
Do I want to talk? Absolutely. Am I able to?
Not after Atos made it clear not to share my war stories.
He's already targeting Mira. I'm not putting my best friend in that situation, too.
Maybe Zayden is right. If I can't lie, all my friends would be safer if I kept my distance.
Good afternoon, second years, a tall rider says, his voice booming as he strides to the center of the floor, quieting the room. I am Captain.
He winces, scratching the trim beard that's a shade darker than his light golden skin.
Professor Grady. And as you can tell, I'm new this year and getting used to the whole professor title, as well as being around 21-year-old kids again. It's been a while since I've been in the quadrant.
He turns toward the end of the classroom, the one section where there are no seats, and crooks his fingers at the heavy wooden desk there. Lesser magic makes it screech across the floor until Professor Grady puts his palm out. Then it stops. He turns toward us and leans back against the edge of the desk.
Ah, that's better. Congratulations on living through your first year.
He turns his head slowly, his gaze raking over each and every one of us.
There are 89 of you in this room. From what the scribes tell me, you are the smallest class to walk this hall since the first 6.
I glance at the empty rows of seats above first wing. We knew last year that we had the fewest number of dragons willing to bond. But to see how few of us there really are is disconcerting.
Fewer dragons are bonding, I say toward Tairn, knowing Andarna drifted into the dreamless sleep a few days ago.
Is that because the Empyrean knows about the Venon?
Yes.
I can almost hear the exasperated sigh in Tairn's voice.
But we need more riders, not fewer.
It doesn't make sense.
The Empyrean remains divided on whether or not we should get involved, Tairn grumbles. Humans aren't the only ones keeping secrets.
But Andarna and Tairn have already made their choice. Of that, I'm sure.
But the second year brings its own challenges, Professor Grady continues as I focus on class. Last year, you learned how to ride the dragons who chose you. This year, you'll learn what to do if you fall off. Welcome to Rider Survival Course, or RSC for short.
What the hell is that? Riddick mutters.
I don't know, I whisper,
writing the letters RSC in the blank book in front of me.
But you know everything,
his eyes widen.
Clearly not,
seems to be the theme lately.
Don't know what it is? Professor Grady asks with a grin, staring straight at Riddick. Good. Our tactics work.
He crosses one boot in front of the other.
RSC is kept classified for a reason, so we get your genuine reactions to the situations at hand.
No one wants my genuine reactions, Riddick murmurs.
I bite back a smile and shake my head.
RSC will teach you how to survive if you become separated from your dragon behind enemy lines. It's a staple of your second year, culminating in 2 full evaluations you must pass in order to continue at Besgaeth. One in a few weeks, and the other around mid-year.
What the hell do they do with a bonded rider who doesn't pass? Rhiannon asks quietly. Every member of my squad looks at me.
I have no clue.
Caroline Ashton raises her hand from her seat in first wing across the room. A chill races down my spine as I remember how close she'd been to Jack Barlow, the rider who'd been intent on killing me until I killed him instead.
Yes? Professor Grady asks.
What precisely does around mid-year mean? Caroline asks. Or in a few weeks?
You won't know the precise date, he answers, lifting his brows.
She huffs, sitting back in her seat.
And I won't tell you, no matter how many times you roll your eyes. No professor will, because quite simply, we want you to be surprised. But we do want you to be prepared. In this room, I will instruct you in navigation, survival techniques, and how to withstand interrogation in case of capture.
My stomach turns over, and my heartbeat goes double time. Torture. He's talking about being tortured. And now I carry information worth being tortured over.
And you'll face trials on those at any time, Professor Grady continues, taken from any place in the quadrant.
They're going to abduct us? Nadine gasps, fear lacing her tone.
Sounds like it, Sawyer mutters in response.
Always something around here, Riddick adds.
The other assessors and I will give you feedback during those trials, so by the time your full evaluations come around, you'll be able to withstand.
He cocks his head to the side as if choosing his words carefully.
Well, be able to withstand the hell we're going to put you through. Take it from someone who has survived it. As long as you don't break during the interrogation portion, you'll do just fine.
Rhiannon puts her hand up, and Professor Grady nods at her.
And if we break? She asks.
All traces of amusement leave his face.
Don't.
With my pulse still racing an hour after orientation, I head to the one place that used to calm my fraying nerves, the archives. As I walk through the doorway, I inhale the scent of parchment ink and the unmistakable tang of bookbinding glue, and let out a long, calming breath. Row upon row of bookshelves span the massive chamber, each taller than Andarna, but not quite up to Tarn, filled with countless volumes on history, mathematics, politics, what I'd trusted to be all the knowledge on the continent. And to think, at one point in my life, I'd thought climbing their ladders would be the scariest thing I'd ever do. Now I'm simply existing with the ever-present danger of Vice Commandant Varish, Atos's threat hanging over my head, a secret revolution that could get us all killed at any moment, and now imminent torture from RSC. Kind of miss the ladders. After 5 days of watching, Jacinia's name finally appeared on the scribe schedule posted outside this morning, which means it's time to get started. Fuck not getting involved. I'm sure as hell not gonna sit around and do nothing while my brother and Zayden risk their lives. Not when I'm certain the answer to protecting both Aracia and Peromish civilians is right here at Bazgaeth. The revolution might not have a scribe in its ranks, but it has me. And if there's even a shot that we can win this war without the weapons the revolution hasn't made or found, then I'm taking it. Or at least investigating the possibility. Only scribes may continue past the long oak table near the doorway. So I stand at its edge and trail my fingers across its familiar grain and scars as I wait. If training to be a scribe taught me anything, it was patience. Gods, I miss this place. I miss what I thought my life would be. Simple, quiet, noble. But I don't miss the woman I was. The one who didn't know her strength. The one who believed everything she read with unfailing confidence. As if the simple act of writing something on a blank page made it gospel. A slight figure wearing a cream tunic, pants, and hood approaches, and for the first time in my life, I'm nervous to see Jacinia. Cadet Sorengale, she signs, smiling when she reaches me and flipping back her hood. Her hair is longer now, the brown braid nearly reaching her waist. Cadet Neil Wart, I sign back, grinning at the sight of my friend. We must be alone to warrant such an enthusiastic greeting. Scribes are strongly discouraged from showing emotion. After all, their job isn't to interpret, but to record. We are, she signs, and then leans to look past me. Well, except Nacia. He's sleeping, I assure her. What are you up to back there?
Fixing a few bindings, she signs. Most everyone is off preparing for the new cadets coming tomorrow. Quiet days are my favorite.
I remember. We'd spent nearly every quiet day at this table, preparing for the exam or helping Markham or my father.
I heard about, her face falls. I'm sorry. He was always really nice to me.
Thank you. I really miss him. I squeeze my hands into fists and pause, knowing that what I say next will either lead us closer to the truth or get me killed.
What is it? She signs, biting her lip.
She's first in her year. That means she's probably trying for the adept path, the hardest of all degrees for scribes, and the one every curator of the scribe quadrant has to have. It means not only does she spend more time with Markham than other scribes, but she'll almost never leave the archives. Nausea grips my stomach at the very real possibility that I can't trust her.
Maybe there are no scribes within the movement for a reason.
I was wondering if you had any older books about the founding of Bezgaeth? Maybe something about why they chose this location for the wards? I sign.
The wards, she signs slowly.
I'm prepping for a defense for a debate in history about why Bezgaeth is here instead of being built in Caldir. And there it is, my first real lie. There's nothing selectively true in that statement, nor any way to take it back. For better or worse, I am committed now to my own cause, saving as many people as I can from this war.
Sure, she smiles. Wait here.
Thank you. 10 minutes later, she hands over 2 tomes written more than 100 years ago, and I thank her again before leaving. The answer to protecting Aracia is in the archives. It has to be. I just have to find it before not even the wards can save us. An excerpt from page 84, The Book of Brennan. It is one thing to cross the parapet your first year, but watching countless candidates lose their life to it feels a little like dying too. Don't watch it if you can help it. Chapter 8. Conscription day looks a little different on this side of it. I lean over the crenellations of the tower in the main war college and take note of the length of the line as the bells ring the 9th hour. But I avoid noticing the features of the individual candidates as they file in, starting up the long, winding staircase that will bring them to the parapet. I don't need any more faces in my nightmares. They're starting up the stairs, I tell Rhiannon, who stands poised with a quill and the roll.
They look nervous, Nadine says, leaning recklessly far over the edge of the tower to see the candidates lined up stories below.
They aren't the only ones. I'm 4 steps away from Dane and his memory-stealing hands that could pluck every secret from my head. I lock my shields in place just like Zayden taught me and fantasize about shoving Dane off the tower. He's made 1 attempt to talk to me, which I quickly shut down. And the look on his face? What the hell kind of right does he have to look heartbroken? Weren't you nervous? Rhiannon asks Nadine. Personally, I wouldn't have made it across without Vi here. I shrug and hop onto the wall, taking a seat to the left of Rai. I only gave you a little more traction. You had the courage and balance to make it across.
It's not raining like it was during our parapet. Nadine looks up at the cloudless July sky and wipes the sweat off her forehead with the back of her hand. Hopefully more of them will make it across.
She glances my way.
You'd have thought your mother would have held off the storm last year, considering you were crossing.
Clearly, you don't know my mother. She wouldn't call the storm to kill me like a coward. But she sure as hell wouldn't stop it to save me, either.
Only 91 dragons have agreed to bond this year, Dane says, leaning back against the wall beside the entrance to the parapet. He's in the exact position Zayden was in last year and has the same exact insignia on his shoulder. Wingleader. The asshole gets Liam and Sole killed and is promoted as a reward. Go figure. More candidates making it across isn't going to equal more riders. He glances my way but quickly averts his gaze. Nadine opens the wooden door at the top of the turret and glances down the stairwell.
They're about halfway up.
Good. Dane pushes off the wall. Remember the rules. Mateus and Sorengale, your jobs are only to take the final roll before parapet. Don't engage. We know the rules.
I brace my hands on the wall beside my thighs and wonder for the 10th time since I woke up this morning when Zayden will arrive today. Maybe then I can address the 3 books on the craft of weaving fabric into traditional tearish knots he left for me. Strips of fabric included, on the desk of my new room on the 2nd-year floor. It's not like I need a hobby, but the note Zayden left on the stack of books, the one that read, "I meant what I said on the parapet. Even when I'm not with you, there's only you." That needed no explanation. He's fighting.
Fine, Dane says, drawing out the word as he stares at me. And Nadine? I don't have a job. Nadine shrugs and picks up the strings of her uniform where she cuts the sleeves off. I was just bored.
Dane frowns at Rhiannon.
Running a tight ship there, squad leader.
What an ass.
There are no regulations about 4 riders on the turret during parapet, she counters. Don't even get me started this morning, Atos.
She looks up from her perfectly numbered scroll and raises a finger.
And if you even think about telling me to call you wing leader, I'll remind you that Ryerson did a hell of a job without needing everyone to supplicate themselves to him.
Because he scared the shit out of everyone, Nadine mutters. Well, everyone except Violet.
I fight my smile and lose as Dane tenses, clearly at a loss for words.
Since it's only us, Rhiannon says, what do you know about the new vice commandant?
Varish? Nothing besides the fact that he's a complete hard-ass who thinks the Quadrant has gone soft in the years since he graduated,
Dane answers.
He's friends with my father.
Figures.
Yeah, it's a real daydream around here,
Rhiannon responds sarcastically. After Resson, I'm starting to realize that there's a purpose to pushing us to the point of breaking. Better to shatter in here than get your friends killed once we leave.
Here they come,
Nadine says, moving out of the way as the first candidates reach the top, their chests heaving from the climb.
They look so young, I tell Tarn, shifting my weight on the wall and wishing I'd been a little more careful wrapping my left knee this morning.
Sweat has already loosened the brace, and the slipping fabric annoys the shit out of me.
So did you,
he replies with a low growl. He's been pissy for the past 2 days, and I can't blame him. He's torn between doing exactly what he wants, flying to Sigale, and seeing me punished for his actions. The first candidate's gaze swings from Nadine's purple hair to the crown of mine, showing all its silver in my usual coronet braid.
Name? I ask. Jory Buell, she says, struggling to catch her breath.
She's tall, with good boots and what looks to be a balanced pack, but her exertion is going to work against her on the parapet.
Step up, Dane orders. Once you're on the other side, you'll give your name to the roll keeper.
The girl nods as Rhiannon jots her name down in the first slot. All of the advice Mira gave me last year races through my mind, but I'm not allowed to give it. This is a whole other kind of challenge. To stand by and do nothing while these candidates risk their lives trying to become us. For many of them, we'll be the last faces they see. Good luck. That's all I'm allowed to say. She starts across the parapet, and the next candidate steps up to take her place. Rhiannon takes down his name, and Dane waits until Jory is a third of the way across before letting the boy start. I watch the first few candidates, my heart in my throat as I remember the terror and uncertainty of this day last year. When a candidate slips at the quarter mark and falls, the ravine below swallowing the last of his screams. I stop watching to see if they make it to the other side. My heart can't take it. 2 hours in, I'm asking their names with zero intention of remembering them. But I take note of the especially aggressive ones, like the bull of a guy with a deeply cleft chin who charges across, tossing the scrawny red-haired candidate struggling at the midway point without hesitation. A little piece of me dies watching the cruelty of it. And it's a struggle to remember that every single candidate is here by their own choice. They're all volunteers, unlike the other quadrants, which take conscripts who pass the entrance exam. Jack Barlow Jr., Rhiannon notes under her breath. I don't miss the way Dane flinches and looks my way. Blowing out a slow breath, I turn toward the next in line, trying to forget how Barlow put me into the infirmary last year. I shiver at the memory of the way he forced pure energy into me through his hands that day on the mat, rattling my bones. Name, I start, but the word dies on my tongue as I stare in shock at the candidate standing far above me. He's taller than Dane, but shorter than Zayden, with a muscular build and strong chin. And though his sandy brown hair is shorter than the last time I saw him, I'd recognize those features, those eyes, anywhere. Cam? What the hell is he doing here? His green eyes flare with surprise, then blink with recognition. Auric, Greycastle. His middle name I recognize, but the last? Did you just make that up? I whisper at him, because it's awful. Auric Greycastle, he repeats, his jaw flexing. He lifts his chin with the same arrogance I've seen in every single one of his brothers, and especially his father. Even if I didn't recognize him from the dozens of times our parents' lives have tossed us into the same room, those startling green eyes mark him the same way my hair does me. He's not going to fool anyone who's ever met his father or any of his brothers. I glance over at Dane, who openly stares at Cam. Auric. You sure about this? Dane asks, and the concern in his eyes gives me a glimpse of my Dane again. But it's short-lived. That version of Dane, the one I could always depend on, died the day he stole my memories and set us on a collision course with Venon. You cross that parapet, and there's no going back. Auric nods. Auric Greycastle, I repeat to Rhiannon, who writes it down but clearly knows something is up. Does your father know? Dane murmurs to Auric. It's none of his business, he replies, stepping up to the parapet and rolling his shoulders. I'm 20. Right, because that's going to make a difference when he realizes what you're doing. Dane retorts, ripping his hand through his hair. He'll kill us all. Are you going to tell him? Auric asks. Dane shakes his head and looks to me like I have an answer for any of this when he's the fucking wing leader. Good. Then do me a favor and ignore me, he says to Dane. But not me. We're second squad, flame section, fourth wing, I tell Auric. Maybe I can convince the others to keep it to themselves if they recognize him. Dane opens his mouth. Not today, I tell him, shaking my head. He snaps his mouth shut. Auric adjusts his pack and starts across the parapet. And I can't bring myself to watch. Who is that? Rhiannon asks. Officially? Arik Greycastle, I tell her. She lifts a brow, and guilt settles in my stomach. There are too many secrets between us already, and this is something I can give her. Something she deserves to know since I just directed him to our squad. Between us? I whisper, and she looks over at me with an arched brow. King Tari's third son. Oh, shit. She looks over her shoulder at the parapet. Pretty much. And I can guarantee his father doesn't know what he's doing. Not with how he felt after Arik's older brother died during his threshing 3 years ago.
Should make for an easy year, Rhiannon says sarcastically, then beckons the next person without missing a beat. Name? Sloane Mari.
My head whips in her direction, and my heart jumps into my throat. Same blonde hair, though it's currently tangling in the breeze past her shoulders. Same sky blue eyes, same rebellion relic winding around her arm. Liam's little sister. Rhiannon stares. Dane looks like he's seen a specter.
With an E on the end,
Sloane says, moving toward the steps and tucking her hair behind her ears nervously. It's going to blow right back in her face with the next gust of wind, temporarily blinding her on the parapet, and I can't let that happen. I promised Liam I'd watch out for her. Stop! I jump off the wall, then yank out the small leather band I keep in the front pocket of my uniform and hand it to her. Tie your hair back first. Braid is best. Sloane startles. Vi? Dane begins. I glare over my shoulder at him. He's the reason Liam isn't here to protect Sloane himself. Rage courses through my veins, heating my skin. Don't you dare say another word or I'll blast you off this turret, Atos. Power crackles through my hands without being called and erupts overhead, streaking across the sky horizontally. Oops. He sits, muttering something about losing every fight today. Sloane takes the leather from me slowly, then braids her hair, simple and quick, tying it with the band and eyeing me the entire time with the 3 inches she has on me. Arms out for balance, I tell her, nausea rolling through me at the risk she's about to take. Don't let the wind sway your steps. They were Mira's words, and now they're mine. Keep your eyes on the stones ahead of you and don't look down. If the pack slips, ditch it. Better you lose it than your life. She glances up at my hair, then down at the 2 patches sewn onto my summer uniform right above my heart. One is the second squad patch we won during the squad battle last year, and the other is a bolt of lightning that branches off in 4 different directions.
You're Violet Sorengale.
I nod, my tongue tying. I can't think of the right words to say about how sorry I am for her loss. Anything that comes to mind isn't enough. Her expression shifts, and something that looks a lot like hatred fills her eyes as she leans down, her voice quieting so that I'm the only one who hears her say, I know what really happened. You got my brother killed. He died for you. I can actually feel the blood drain from my face as I blink away the memory of Day crashing into the wyvern who'd come for Taryn, sending Liam flying across my saddle. He'd been so heavy that my shoulders had almost dislocated, trying to keep him from falling. Yes, I can't deny it, and I don't look away. I'm so sorry.
Go straight to hell, she whispers, and I really mean that. I hope no one commends your soul to Malik. I hope he rejects it. Liam was worth a dozen of your kind, and I hope you spend eternity paying for what you cost me, what you cost all of us.
Yep. That look in her eyes is definitely hatred. My heart abandons my body and lands somewhere in the vicinity of her recommendation.
It wasn't your fault,
Taryn says. It was. And if I don't pull my shit together right now, I'll fail Liam all over again. Feel free to hate me, I say to Sloane, stepping aside and clearing the way to the parapet. Just do me a favor and put your fucking arms out so you don't see Liam before I do. Do it for him, not me. So much for the caring, gentle mentor I'd hoped to be for her. She jerks her gaze from mine and steps up. The wind kicks up and she wobbles, sending my heart rate spiking. What in the angry Mari was that about? Rhiannon asks.
I shake my head. I just can't.
Then the stubborn girl finally extends her arms and starts walking.
I don't look away.
I watch every damned step she takes like my future is tied to hers. My breath freezes when she stumbles halfway across, and my lungs don't fully expand until I see her reach the other side.
She made it,
I whisper up to Liam. Then I take the next name. 71 candidates fall from the parapet, according to the rolls. That's 4 more than our year. An hour after the numbers are calculated, the quadrant assembles in typical formation. 3 columns per wing, and the roll keeper calls name after name, dividing the first years into squads. Our squad is nearly full, and there's still no sign of Sloane. I looked for her in the courtyard earlier, but either she's hiding from me. Or she's hiding from me. That's the only logical answer. Nadine, Riddick, and I wait behind 8 first years shifting their weight, the living embodiment of anxiety. Arik stands with impossibly perfect posture, but keeps his head down next to a red-haired girl whose complexion is full-on green in the row ahead. The fear radiating off them is palpable. It's in every drop of sweat sliding down the stocky guy's neck 2 rows ahead, in every bitten nail the brunette spits out onto the gravel next to him. It's coming out of their pores.
Is it me, or is this fucking weird?
Riddick asks from my right.
Fucking weird, Nadine agrees. I kind of want to tell them that it's going to be okay.
It's not polite to lie, Imogen says from behind us, where she stands with Quinn, who looks downright bored as she trims the ends of her blonde curls with a dagger. Don't get attached. They're all dragon fodder until threshing. The stocky-looking guy with deep umber skin looks over his shoulder, shooting a wide-eyed look at Imogen. She stares him down and makes a circle with her forefinger, wordlessly telling him to turn around. He does.
Be nice,
I whisper at her.
I'll be nice once I think they might stick around, she replies.
I thought you said it's not polite to lie,
Riddick counters with a grin, shaking his head in a way that makes the collar of his uniform move, but not the tall spikes he's somehow gelled his dark hair into today. I blink, then lean closer to him, staring at the side of his neck.
What is...
Did you get a tattoo? He smiles and pulls at his collar, showing off the inked tip of a sword tail on the warm brown skin of his neck, ending near the base of his collar. It wraps to my shoulder, to Atrum's relic. Badass, right?
Badass,
Nadine nods in appreciation. Absolutely, I agree. Vissia Howellen is called to our squad. Her name is oddly familiar, and when she appears, moving into formation 2 rows ahead, I remember why. A burn scar sprawls from her collar to her hairline, curving along the right side of her face. She's a repeat. She survived angering an orange dagger tail at threshing last year, but barely. Sloane is called to first wing. Shit, I mutter. How the hell am I supposed to help her in an entirely different wing?
I'd consider that a blessing, Nadine says quietly. She didn't seem to be a fan.
Dane steps forward on the dais to talk to Aura Beinhaven, the senior wing leader, and the daggers she has strapped to her upper arms glimmer in the sunlight as she nods her head in response. He glances my way, then crosses over to the roll keeper at the edge of the dais and she pauses, lifting her pen to scribble something on the roll. Correction, she calls out over the crowd. Sloane Mari to second squad, flame section, 4th wing.
Yes.
My shoulders dip in pure relief. Dane walks back to his position, ignoring the reproachful stare from Vice Commandant Varish, and his composure slips for the second it takes for him to shoot me an indecipherable look. What, is Sloane supposed to be some kind of peace offering? The roll keeper moves on, placing the first years in their squads. Sloane appears a minute or two later, and my relief is short-lived when she opens her mouth.
No, I refuse any squad but this one.
Ouch. Rhiannon moves from her place at the front of our squad and gives Sloane a look that makes me glad I'm never on Rhi's bad side.
Does it look like I give a shit what you want, Mari?
Mari? Sawyer looks back through the lines of first years that separate us, and a new patch on his shoulder makes me smile. He's a fantastic choice for Rhi's executive officer. Liam's sister, I tell him. His jaw slackens.
No shit?
Riddick glances between Sloane and me.
No shit, I respond. Oh, and if you haven't noticed, she already hates me. I cannot be in the same squad as her!
Sloane glares at me with pure hate fire in her eyes. But hey, her hair is still braided, so I'm calling that a win. She might loathe me, but maybe she'll listen at least enough to stay alive.
Stop disrespecting your squad leader and get information, Sloane,
Imogen hisses. You're acting like a spoiled aristocrat.
Imogen?
Sloane startles.
Get in formation, Rhiannon orders. I'm not asking, cadet.
Sloane pales and steps into line in front of Nadine, taking our last first-year slot. Rhiannon slides past Nadine and leans in close.
Pretty sure that girl wants you dead, she whispers.
Any particular reason I should know about? Should I see if we can trade her to another squad? Yeah, I got her brother killed. He was sworn to protect me and he lost his dragon and his life, keeping that promise. But I can't say that any more than I can tell her there are venin beyond our borders. My stomach twists at the idea of having to lie to her.
Selective truths.
She blames me for Liam's death, I say quietly. Let her stay. At least if she's in the squad, Codex says she can't kill me.
You sure?
Her brow furrows. I promised Liam I'd take care of her. She stays. I nod.
Between Arik and Sloane, you're collecting strays, Rhiannon warns quietly.
We were strays once too, I answer.
Good point. Now look at us. Alive and everything.
A slight smile curves her lips before she returns to her place in formation. The noon sun beats down on the courtyard, and it hits me how far back we are from the dais, where the wing leaders wait with Commandant Pancheck. Tufts of his hair catch in the morning breeze as he takes in the formation with wide, assessing brown eyes. This is the height of enrollment this year. We'll start dying pretty much immediately. But not me. I've danced with Malik more than my fair share over this last year and told him to fuck right off every single time. Maybe Sloane is right and he doesn't want me.
You're agitated.
There's worry in Taryn's tone.
I'm fine.
That's what we're all supposed to be, right? Fine. Doesn't matter who dies next to us or who we kill during training or war. We're fine. The ceremony finally starts with Pancheck's ominous yet pompous welcome to the first years and our new vice commandant, and then Aura delivers a surprisingly inspirational talk about the honor of defending our people before Dane takes the lead, clearly trying to step into Zayden's boots. But he's no Zayden. The sound of wing beats and the gasps of first years fill the air. And I breathe deeply as six dragons, five belonging to the wing leaders, and a one-eyed orange dagger tail I don't recognize, land on the courtyard walls behind the dais. That orange looks temperamental, his gaze darting over the formation as his tail twitches. But none of them are as menacing as Sigail or as terrifying as Taryn. I glance down and pick a piece of stray lint off my dark uniform. First year shrieks echo off the stone walls as the dragon's claws flex, digging into the stonework. A heavy rock falls, missing the dais by a mere matter of feet, and yet not a single rider up there flinches.
Now I understand how Dane was so blasé about all of this last year. There's not a single dragon up there who would risk Terran's wrath by torching me. Are they beautiful to behold? Absolutely. Daunting? Sure. There's even a slight elevation in my pulse. And yeah, Aura's red club tail is eyeing the cadets like lunch, but I know it's mostly to see if she can weed out the weak. The redhead directly ahead of me vomits, puke splattering the gravel. Then Aura boots as she bends at the waist and heaves, emptying the contents of her stomach. Gross. Sloane wobbles, and she shifts her stance like she's about to bolt. That's a bad idea. Don't move and you'll be fine, Mari, I say. They'll torch you if you run. She stiffens, but her hands curl into fists. Good. Pissed is better than scared right now. Dragons respect anger. They exterminate cowards. Let's hope the rest aren't sympathetic pukers, Riddick mutters and wrinkles his nose.
Yeah, that one isn't going to make it if she does that at presentation, Imogen whispers.
These first years would shit themselves if Terran did so much as a flyby. He's almost twice as big as any of these dragons perched on the wall. Didn't feel like loaning your sheer intimidation skills to this show? I ask Terran.
I do not participate in parlor tricks, he responds, his derision making me smile as Dane prattles on about something.
He's trying desperately for Zayden's charisma and coming up woefully short.
What do you know about Major Varish's orange?
He looks unstable and hungry.
Solas is there?
His tone sharpens. Is Solas a one-eyed orange dagger tail?
Yes.
He doesn't sound happy about it.
Do not take your eyes off him.
Weird, but all right. I can watch the orange glare at cadets out of his one good eye.
A third of you will be dead by next July. If you want to wear Rider black, then you earn it, Dane shouts, his voice rising with each word. You earn it every single day.
Kath digs his red claws into the masonry and leans over Dane's head, swinging his sword tail behind him in a serpentine motion as he blows a hot breath of steam over the crowd that sours my stomach. Dane really needs to check Kath's teeth, because there has to be a bone stuck in there decaying or something. Cries sound in the courtyard, and a first year to the right, tail section, breaks out of formation and sprints back toward the parapet, racing through the aisles between cadets.
No, no, no.
We have a runner, Riddick mutters.
Shit, I cringe, my heart sinking as two others from Third Wing decide to follow his example,
their arms pumping wildly as they make a break for it from first squad of their tail section. This isn't going to end well.
Looks contagious, Quinn adds as they race by.
Fuck, they actually think they'll make it. Imogen sighs, her shoulders drooping. The trio nearly collides directly behind the center of our wing, our section, then bolt toward the opening in the courtyard wall where the parapet lies.
Eyes on Solas!
Terran shouts. I look forward again, watching Solas narrow his one eye to a slit and swivel his head as he draws a full, rumbling breath. Lead fills my chest as I glance back over my shoulder and glimpse the runners nearing the parapet. The dragons didn't let them get that far last year. He's toying with them, and at this angle, oh shit, Solas extends his neck, tilts his head horrifyingly low, and curls his tongue, fire churning up his throat. Get down! I shout, lunging for Sloane and tackling her to the ground as fire blasts overhead, the flames so close that heat singes every patch of exposed skin on my body. To Sloane's credit, she doesn't cry out as I cover as much of her body as I can, curling over her. But the soul-rending screams behind us are unmistakable. I open my eyes long enough to see Arik laying flat over the redhead under the endless stream of fire. Terran's roar fills my head as lava licks along my arched back. A scream musters at the base of my throat, but I can't breathe in this inferno, let alone give it a voice.
As quickly as it struck, the heat dissipates, and I fill my lungs with precious oxygen, gasping for breath before shoving off the gravel to my feet. I turn to face the aftermath as the other second and third years around me rise. Those at the back of our section who acted when I shouted are alive. Those who didn't, aren't. Solas took out the runners, one of our first years, and at least half of third squad. Chaos erupts. Silver One, Tarn demands. I'm alive, I shout back at Tarn, but I know he can feel the pain my adrenaline is masking. The smell. Oh, it's the smell of sulfur and the burned flesh of the dead cadets makes bile rise in my throat. Vi, you're back, Nadine whispers, reaching for me and withdrawing her hand. It's torched. How bad is it? I tug at the front of my uniform, and it comes off in my hand. The fabric burned clean through at my back. The armor beneath my uniform stays in place, at least. Riddick runs his hands over the flattened, singed peaks of his hair, and my gaze darts around, checking on everyone else next. I note that Quinn and Imogen are safe behind us, already rushing to help Third Squad. Sawyer, Rhiannon, Riddick, Nadine. We all exchange quick looks that ask and answer the same question. We're all intact. I let out a long breath, my head dizzy with relief. It didn't burn through your armor, Nadine says. Good. Thank gods for dragon scales. Are you hurt? I ask Sloane as she stumbles, staring in shock at the carnage of Third Squad, as Arik helps the redhead to her feet. Sloane, are you hurt? No. She isn't shaking her head as much as she's flat out trembling. Get back into formation, Panchek's voice amplifies over the mayhem. Riders do not balk at fire. The fuck we don't? Whoever didn't balk is dead. Dane's wide eyes meet mine. He's either as surprised by what happened as I am, or a really good actor. All the wing leaders must be, because they look equally stricken. Looking back at what remains of Third Squad, I see Imogen staring at a pile of cinder. As if she can feel me staring, she slowly drags her numbed gaze to mine. Now, Panchek demands. She staggers forward, and I meet her halfway, grabbing hold of her elbows. Imogen? Kieran, she whispers. Kieran's dead. Gravity, logic, whatever it is that keeps me grounded shifts. There's no way that was intentional, is there? Imogen, don't say it, she warns, glancing around us. We make it back into formation as Major Varish moves to the front of the dais, appearing completely unfazed that his dragon just took out riders who hadn't broken formation. Some of them bonded.
It is not only the first years who earn their leathers at Bazgaeth, he shouts, and I swear he's speaking directly to me. The wings are only as strong as their weakest rider.
Rage overwhelms my senses, scalding hot and undeniably not mine. A girl with blackish blue hair two rows ahead makes a run for it, running from our squad, and my heart stops when Solas leans forward again despite a snap from Cath on the right, the orange's mouth opening. Oh, gods. I'm considering tackling her to the ground myself when a set of wing beats as familiar as my own heartbeat sounds behind me. And the anger consuming my every breath, overruling my emotions, turns to something deadlier. Wrath. Tarn lands on the wall behind us, his wings flaring so wide one nearly touches the dormitory as he takes out the top row of stones next to the parapet. First years scream, running for their lives. Tarn! I shout with more than a little relief, but there's no breaking through the absolute fury coursing through him. My attention whips back and forth between Tarn and the dragons behind the dais. The wing leader's dragons all rear back, including Calf, but Solas holds his ground, his tongue curling when Tarn's chest expands.
You do not have the right to burn what is mine.
His words consume all my mental pathways as Tarn lets loose an earth-shattering roar in Solas's direction.
Everyone slams their hands over their ears, including me, my entire body vibrating with the sound, hot air blasting the back of my neck. The wing leader's dragons take a step to the side of the wall as the roar ends, away from the orange dagger tail, but Solas stands firm, his eye narrowing to a golden slit.
Holy shit, Nadine whispers. That about sums it up.
Taren extends his neck forward, high above our squad, then snaps his teeth together loudly in Solas's direction in a clear threat. My heart races so fast, it practically hums. Solas lets loose a short, rasping snarl, then swings his head in a serpentine motion. His claws grip and ungrip the edge of the wall, and I hold my breath until he launches skyward, his wings beating quickly as he retreats. Taren lifts his head, watching the flight before he turns his attention to the dais, and exhales a sulfur-laced gust of steam, blowing Varish's thick black hair.
I think he got the message, I say to Taren. If Solas comes near you again, he knows I will devour his human whole and let him rot within me while his heart still beats, and then I'll take the eye I so graciously left him.
That's graphic. I'm not touching the question of their history with waves of anger still rolling off Taren like a thunderstorm.
The warning should be effective. For now.
He retracts, drawing back for power before he leaps from the wall, his wing beats kicking up the gravel around us as he takes off. Pancheck returns to the podium, but his hand isn't exactly steady as he swipes at the thinning hair on his head, the medals on his chest.
Well then, where were we?
Varish glares at me, his hatred a palpable taste in my mouth. And I know that even if he hadn't been an enemy before, he's sure as Dune is now.
An excerpt from United Navarre, A Study in Survival by Grotto Burnell, curator of the Scribe Quadrant. And in the mountains of the Steel Ridge Range, the green dragons of the Wayne-Leutzig line, known for their keen intellect and rational countenance, offered their ancestral hatching grounds for the good of dragonkind, and the wards of Navarre were woven by the first six at what is now Basgaiath War College. Chapter 9. The next morning, I wake in a cold sweat, the sky pale with early light through my east-facing window, my body flooded with adrenaline from the nightmare. Like every morning since Zayden left, I wrap my knees tight and dress quickly, pulling the flexible summer uniform meant for sparring over my armor and plaiting my hair in a single loose braid as I head out of my room. My heart still pounds as I jog down the spiral steps, my brain unable to shake the nightmares that come so vividly while I sleep. When I sleep. I swallow back the bile rising in my throat. One of the Venin got away in Resin, red veins spidering away from his malevolent eyes. Who knows how many more there are, making their way toward our border while we rest. On the ground floor, first years scurry to their newly assigned chore duties. But the courtyard is blissfully empty, the air thick with humidity yet mercifully cooler than yesterday thanks to the storm rolling in. I hold the heel of my boot to the back of my thigh, stretching the muscle. Despite copious amounts of Winifred's ointment, the skin of my back is still tender from yesterday's burn, but it's 100 times better than it was last night.
Hasn't anyone told you that a perk of being a second year is the extra hour of sleep you get to have without chores?
Imogen asks as she approaches, her footsteps light on the gravel.
Yeah, which I'm sure is great for people who can sleep.
I stretch the other leg.
What are you doing?
Going with you.
She stretches too, rolling her neck at the same time.
But what I can't figure out is why the hell you've been running every morning.
My stomach hollows.
How would you know that I've been running every morning? If Zayden thinks I need someone to watch out for me this year.
I shake my head, unable to finish that sentence. He was supposed to visit yesterday, but never showed, much to Tarn's aggravation and my worry.
Relax. Zayden doesn't know. My room is right above yours. And let's just say I'm not sleeping very well either.
Her gaze darts toward the rotunda as a group of cadets walks out. Dane, Sawyer, Rhiannon, Bodhi. I recognize most as fourth wing leadership. Rhi and Sawyer spot us immediately and head our way.
So, why are we running, Sorengale? Imogen asks, finishing her stretches.
Because I generally suck at it, I answer. I'm good in short bursts, but anything longer than that, and I won't make it. Not to mention it's hell on my joints.
Imogen's gaze snaps to mine, her eyes widening.
Bodhi's farther back and starts our way. His walk is so similar to Zayden's stride that I almost do a double take.
What are you doing up? Rhiannon asks, tucking a notebook under her arm as she and Sawyer reach us.
I could ask you the same, I force a smile. But I'm guessing it's a leadership meeting?
Yes. Concern creases her brow as she studies my face. Are you all right?
Absolutely. Good meeting?
It's a pathetic attempt at normal conversation, given the scenes from Resson still replaying through my head from my nightmare.
It was fine, Sawyer answers. They moved Bodhi Duran from tail section to flame.
We had to do some restructuring, seeing as most of Third Squad was torched yesterday, Rhiannon adds.
Right, that makes sense.
I glance over her shoulder and gauge I have about 5 seconds before Bodhi reaches us. If he knows I'm struggling, there's no doubt he'll tell Zayden, and I really don't need that conversation right now.
Listen, I have to get going.
Going where? Rhiannon asks.
Running, I answer truthfully.
She draws her head back, her brow furrowing deeper.
You never run.
Then it's a good time to start,
I try to joke.
She glances between Imogen and me.
With Imogen?
Yep, Imogen replies. Apparently we're runners now.
Bodhi arrives in time to hear that, his eyebrows rising.
Together,
Rhiannon's gaze keeps bouncing, to Imogen, me, and back again.
I don't understand.
If you can't lie, keep your distance.
Nothing to understand, we're just running.
My smile is so tight, I think my entire face might fracture with the effort it takes to keep it there.
Bodhi's gaze narrows.
But what if you don't make it in time for breakfast? We will,
Imogen promises, if we leave right now.
She glances at Bodhi.
I've got this.
Let them go,
Bodhi says.
But,
Rhiannon starts, her gaze searching mine as if she can see right through me. Imogen's been training me since last year, but Rhi knows we aren't exactly friends.
Let them go, he repeats, and this time it's not a suggestion, but an order from her section leader.
I'll see you later,
Rhi asks.
Later, I agree.
Unsure I mean it as I turn without another word and jog across the courtyard toward the tunnel. The gravel is shit for traction, making it harder, but that's fine. I need harder.
Imogen catches me within a few strides.
What do you mean you won't make it?
What? We pause at the doors.
You said you won't make it.
Imogen gets to the handle before I do and holds the door shut.
When I asked you why you're running, what did you mean?
For a second, I debate not telling her, but she was there too. She's not sleeping either.
Soleil didn't.
My gaze locks with hers, but her expression doesn't change.
Swear to the gods, nothing phases her. I envy that.
She was on the ground when she killed her. The way she channeled it drained everything from the land, everything touching the land, including Soleil and fuel. I watched it happen. I watch it happen every night when I close my eyes. It spreads so quickly, and I know I can't outrun it. Not if I'm too far from Tarn. I'm not fast enough for any considerable distance.
I try to swallow the tightness in my throat, but the knot seems to live there lately.
Yet,
Imogen says, yanking the door to the tunnel open.
We're not fast enough yet, but we will be. Let's go.
It's weird as hell to be all the way up here,
Riddick says from my left as we sit in the first battle brief of the academic year later that day, looking down at where the first years take up more than a third of the room. It's standing room only in the giant tiered classroom for the third years behind us. This is the only place in the quadrant besides the gathering hall designed to hold all the rider cadets. But it will take a few weeks of death rolls before we can all sit in front of the story's tall map of the continent. It reminds me of the one in Brennan's briefing room in Eratia. He thinks we only have 6 months until Venon challenge the wards, and yet there's not a single indication on this map.
View is a little better, Nadine remarks from his other side.
Definitely easier to see the higher portions of the map, Rhiannon agrees at my right, taking out her supplies and setting them on the desktop before her. Did you have a good run this morning? I'm not sure I'd call it good, but it was effective. I put my notebook and pen on the table, wincing at the pain shooting up my shins, and reinforce my shields. Keeping them up at all times is harder than I thought, and Tarn loves to remind me when they slip.
Look at all those first years with their quills and ink,
Riddick remarks, leaning forward to look down at the underclassmen.
There once was a time we didn't have lesser magic to power ink pens, Nadine retorts. Stop acting superior.
We are superior, he grins.
Nadine rolls her eyes, and I can't fight my smile. Professor DeVera walks down the narrow set of stone steps on our left that follows the tiers of seats, her favorite longsword strapped to her back. Her black hair is a little shorter since I saw her last, and there's a fresh, jagged wound along the rich mahogany skin of her biceps.
I heard she spent last week with the Southern Wing, Rhiannon says quietly. My stomach tenses, and I wonder what, if anything, she saw.
Welcome to your first battle brief, Professor DeVera announces.
I tune out as she gives the same speech as last year and warns the first years not to be surprised if the third years are called into service early to man the mid-guard posts or shadow the forward wings. Her gaze rakes over them before she raises her attention to the seconds, her eyes crinkling for a heartbeat, as she flashes a proud smile at me before continuing upward, as she explains how necessary it is for us to understand the current affairs of our borders.
This is also the only class where you will not only answer to a rider as your professor, but a scribe as well, she finishes, lifting her hand toward the stairs.
Colonel Markham lifts the corner of his cream-colored robes as he descends, heading for the recessed floor of the lecture hall. My muscles lock, and I fight the urge to flick one of my daggers into his traitorous back.
He knows everything. He has to. He wrote the fucking textbook on Navarian history that all writers are taught from. And until last year, I was his star pupil, the one he'd hand-picked to succeed in the scribe quadrant.
You'll respect Colonel Markham as you would any other professor, Professor DeVera says. He is the foremost authority at Bazgaeth when it comes to all matters, not only of our history, but current events as well. Some of you may not know this, but information from the front is actually received at Bazgaeth before it's sent to the king in Kaldir. So you'll be hearing it first here.
I glance down the tiers to where Arik sits beside Sloane in the row with our squad's first years. And to his credit, he doesn't flinch or even fidget in his seat. One good look, and Markham will know who he is. But with that haircut, if he keeps his head down, he's got a shot at blending in. At least until his father sounds the alarm that he's missing from his gold-plated bed in Kaldir.
First discussion point,
Markham says when he reaches the floor of the hall, his silver eyebrows knitting.
There were not one, but two attacks on our border by drifts of griffins in the past week.
A murmur goes through the hall.
The first,
Professor Devera says as she lifts her hand and uses lesser magic to move one of the flag markers from the side of the map to the border we share with the Breivik province of Poromiel, was near the village of Sipin, high in the Espen Mountains, an hour's flight from Montserrat. The only sound is pen and quill against parchment as we take notes.
"Here's what we can tell you," Markham says, folding his hands behind his back. "The drift attacked 2 hours past midnight, when all but a few villagers were asleep. It was unprovoked, and because Sipin is one of the villages that lies beyond the wards, the violence went undetected by the eastern wing for some matter of hours."
My shoulders dip, but I keep writing, pausing only to look up at the map. That village is at 8,000 feet, an altitude unpleasant for griffins. What were they looking for? Maybe I should have spent last night reading about what's in those mountains instead of 600-year-old political ramifications of establishing our war college here and not in Caldir to the west.
"The drift was routed by 3 dragons on patrol from the local outpost. But by the time they arrived, most of the damage had been done. Supplies were stolen. Homes were burned. The last griffin flyer was found in some of the local caves above the village, though neither he nor his griffin could tell us the motivation for attack, as they were both burned on sight."
Hard for prisoners to talk about the venin they've been fighting if they're dead.
"That's what they get," Riddick mutters, shaking his head, "going after civilians."
But were they? Markham didn't mention civilian casualties, only destruction. I look up over my shoulder at where Imogen stands with Bodhi and Quinn, her arms folded over her chest. She glances down at me, her mouth tightening before she gives her attention back to Markham.
Shit. I want to be standing up there with them, asking what they really think, or even with Aya, who's with her third-year squad up in the corner.
We might not be close, but at least she knows the truth. More than anything, I want to talk to Zayden. I want answers he's not willing to give.
"As for the second," Professor Devera continues, moving another flag, this one to the south.
My breakfast churns in my stomach when she puts the flag in place.
"The outpost of Athbean was attacked 3 days ago."
I gasp and the pen falls from my hand, hitting the desk loudly in the quiet room.
"Are you all right?" Rhiannon whispers.
"Something you have to say, Cadet Sorengale?"
Markham asks, cocking his head and looking at me in that characteristically unreadable expression he's so fond of. But the challenge I've often seen when he used to try and dig a correct answer out of me is there in the simple lift of his brow. I know he's well aware of what is happening beyond our borders, but did Colonel Atos tell him that I know too?
"No, sir," I answer, grabbing my pen before it can roll off my desk. "I was startled, that's all. As far as I know from what you taught me in preparation for the Scribe Quadrant, outposts are rarely ever attacked directly."
"And?"
He leans back against the desk in the center of the floor, tapping a finger along the side of his bulbous nose.
"And Montserrat was also directly attacked in the last year. So I can't help but wonder if this tactic is becoming more commonly used by our enemy."
"Interesting thought. It's something we're considering among